One of the most recognized, most prominent spiritual leaders in the world, a man who built a global movement out of a single breathing technique, who got meditation from ashrams to the United Nations. Shri Shri Ravi Shankar, welcome to India, Russia and the world.
Namaste.
Namaste. When we think of an international economic forum, we expect ministers, CEOs, entrepreneurs. But this year, at the St. Petersburg Economic Forum, we had someone rather rare, Shri Shri Ravi Shankar, the spiritual guru. What role does spiritualism have in an economic forum, which is all about deals and finances and business?
You know, wellness is so much part of today's economy. And wellness is definitely connected to spirituality. Today, people want to measure the success, not just with the bank account, but also the happiness factor. How happy people are in the workplace. And stress level in the world is increasing. So when health could be a part of economic forum, definitely spirituality also. And spiritual tourism is a big stakeholder in economics of any country. Festivals, for example. You see, whenever there is big festivals, that's when economy booms. So you can't see life in compartments anymore. You have to see life as a holistic, with a holistic approach.
At SPIEF, the world talked about pragmatic dialogue as a path to a stable future. But you've always said that no dialogue goes anywhere if it's without inner clarity. What is this inner clarity that you talk about?
It is very obvious when you say inner clarity that a person's intention needs to be right. Your intention is to bring people together for the good, larger good of all. Then things will work. You know, if you're only thinking about immediate selfish goals, then of course the other person, the other side would always suspect you. So better understanding is essential. Trust building exercise is essential. And a larger and long term strategy and plans must be in place.
President Putin, he called India a reliable partner at the St. Petersburg Economic Forum. India and Russia, they've maintained this consistent friendship, this strong partnership, even during periods of global turbulences. What lessons should the world learn from the India-Russia friendship?
No, India-Russia has been very close. I mean, Russia has been a very dear friend of India, and they have a friend in need is a friend indeed. You know, it said, as the saying goes, Russia has always stood with India in a time of crisis. Even when India was under sanctions, it was Russia who stood with us. And in United Nations Security Council, Russia always supported India. So the friendship goes a long way, especially now with the Prime Minister Modi and Putin. They're very good friends and, they're taking the relationship to another height.
Every time Mr. Modi and Mr. Putin meet, the world watches and they're trying to decode this body language geopolitically. But will you spiritually tell us, what do you think when the two leaders are meeting? It's very warm.
I mean, there is a genuine friendship, genuine handshake and genuine caring for each other, each other's country.
Do you think spirituality can actually become a form of soft power?
It is already. For centuries, spirituality is the soft power of India.
Mm-hmm.
If 2.5 billion people around the world are practicing yoga, you know, what does it indicate? Indian music, meditation is so very popular all over the world. And right from Einstein to modern-day scientists, they all appreciate the Indian philosophy a lot. Yoga and Vedanta has taken deep roots in the intellectuals, especially, all over the world. So India is a spiritual power, and India has given this slogan, Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam, the whole world is one family. And that is the most relevant thing today when there are conflicts, regional conflicts and conflicts with religious overtone in it. I think spirituality is that which can make the world into a family. You know, technology has shrunk the world into a village. But it is only spirituality that can create that bonding among the cultures, among civilizations, and make them all feel at home. If you come to any of the Art of Living centers, you can find people from Mongolia to Argentina to Africa to Europe. Everyone is coming together. I mean, there is no differences. There is no, any sort of barriers between the community. They all come together with one spirit, good understanding. If that can happen between people from Lebanon and people in Arab and the Jewish people and the Muslims in a spiritual gatherings, why should it not happen in the world anywhere else?
You've been doing what you've been doing for some 45 years now. In that time, do you think India's perception on the global stage has changed drastically?
You know, perceptions keep changing with every generation. And today, with a lot of information floating around and easy access to, information, of course, people have better understanding. Those prejudices which people had before, India means only snake charmer, spirituality is only for those people who have little cuckoo or little gone off their mind. That sort of prejudice which was prevailing, say 40 years back, 30 years back, that's no longer there. Today people take pride in doing spiritual practices. They take pride in being a vegan, and they take pride in caring for environment. I remember 40 years back, 35 years back, when I would say we have to care for environment, people thought, what age are they? We are in age of development and technology, and who cares if we cut few trees? That was the mindset. People had no attention at all, or even awareness about caring for ecosystem. But now, every country has an environmental ministry. Every country talks about sustainable development. I don't think you were even born at that time. When I was, 25, 26, 27, those days, there was no environmental ministry everywhere. There was no talk of sustainable development. And when we would say anything, then my generation, myself, raised this in several, platforms in my talks, people would raise their eyebrows. See? They thought this is some Stone Age thing that we are telling, that we have to care for them. But today, see, people are much more aware. Hardly you would find any vegetarian restaurants in those days in Europe. Today,
everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
So there's more and more awareness about, caring for the planet.
When we talk politics and spirituality, they often don't merge. But then we see Prime Minister Narendra Modi, for example, who promotes yoga. How do you see it?
See, Mahatma Gandhi was a very spiritual person who said spirituality and politics doesn't go together. It's a spirituality which gives a broader vision for you. It gives that selfless tendency, selfless service. So Prime Minister Narendra Modi is also doing that. He takes up the yoga and talks about serving society and empowering women. All this is part of spirituality. Spirituality is not some sort of voodoo sort of thing. It is caring and sharing. And practices that help you to uplift your spirit. See, we are made up of both matter and spirit, right? Our body needs amino acid, carbohydrate, protein, minerals. Our spirit needs caring, enthusiasm, commitment, love, compassion, these qualities which comprise our spirit, when they are nurtured, and that is what I would call a spirituality.
You've spoken to rebels, prisoners, political leaders in conflict zones. After all these years, what have you learned about human conflict that you think perhaps leaders and governments don't understand fully?
See, the trust breaks down, communication breaks down, then no dialogue becomes possible. So you need mediators who have trust with both the parties. And then patient hearing of both sides, understanding of both sides. Then such people can recreate the dialogue and they bring back the trust in each. This is very essential. In short, I would say, you know, we need to spiritualize the politics, socialize the business, and secularize the religion. When I say secularize the religion, I mean to say that every religious leader should pray not only for their community, for the entire mankind. They should see the whole humanity as one. Then terrorism will not happen. You know, religious tension will not happen. Just imagine every religious leader pray for all the people in the world, irrespective of what religion they follow. There'll be harmony. Similarly, when business entities take more social responsibility, they are not caring only for money, but also for the planet and the people. This is what I mean by socializing the business. And then spiritualize the politics is when the people and the planet stays ahead of oneself or one's party politics. That is real spirituality. I would say there has been ample example in history of people who have been there to help out others, selflessly serving the society.
Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, you know what I really want to ask you? How you actually feel about economics, money? Is that a good thing or bad?
See, money is just a means. It's neither good nor bad. It's how you use it. You know, if you are greedy, money is bad. If you are using it for some good cause, then it is good. You know, charity is part of any spirituality, right? You can't say, I give you nice good words, but I won't help you out in any way. That's not spirituality. And charity cannot happen from an empty bowl. You need to have something in the bowl in order to give the charity. So everything has a place in the in life and the world. And if you emphasize too much on any one thing, that brings imbalance in the system. So money has its own place, and humanity should, caring and sharing should be above the money.
Across all your peace efforts, was there one conversation or one moment that stayed with you? Something that you still think about?
Tell me, why do we have to always narrow down at one thing? You know, I...
Because it makes it special.
Everything is special in life. We try to simplify things, oversimplify things. That's where we go wrong. You just go to a pharmacy shop and tell them, give me one medicine that would cure me of all my problems. What would they say? Come on, what is your issue? This world has multiple problems and you have multiple ideas. Similarly, life poses multiple challenges. And each challenge is such very unique. And they have unique problems, unique solutions too.
When you look around today, trust between nations, it's collapsing. US, Europe, Israel, Iran, there's Russia and the West. As a journalist, I see it as global geopolitical toxicity. As a spiritual leader, what do you see it as?
I agree with you. I see this as a result of breaking down of communication. As a result of narrow goals as one's aim, narrow economic or political gains. are, reigning in the front rather than a long-term vision on good for all.
But what's the solution to this?
Again, I would say, countries which are neutral should intervene. They should talk to both sides. Instead of sitting with the problems, I would say, ask each of them, what is your solution? And then sit with the solution and bring understanding between each other. These are the things that is needed,
You know what I really want to know from you? What do you think if men and women are different spiritually, but more importantly, are women politicians different from men politicians spiritually?
Well, I have not gone into such analysis. For me, men and women are equally empowered and they equally are good. We have great women leaders everywhere in the world.
But you know, they always say that if it was women ruling some countries, wars would not happen. Do you agree with that?
No, that I don't think that could be a right assessment. Yeah. When Mrs. Gandhi was there, in India, we had two, three wars. So, she stood up against the aggression. And Zia Khalida was there. And then Benazir Bhutto was there in Pakistan. And Margaret Thatcher was in UK. So there were many women leaders that they are very sensitive. I think they are very good in communication, no doubt. But I would say equally, men are also capable. Let's see, for example, Prime Minister Narendra Modi is working so much for the Global South. So he is really leading the African countries. For the first time, he invited them for G20 meeting.
And that's why his politics is seen as very macho. Do you not think that
No, the
gender
women's
plays a
bill was already in India is being promoted. At one point of time, India, four corners of India was ruled by women. And Asia is doing much better, of course, but other countries, women need to be empowered more.
You met presidents, prime ministers from lots of countries, from across countries. Who would you say is the most spiritually connected leader you've
You
met?
know, every leader has a spiritual aspect in.
But if you had to pick one, who's the most spiritually connected
No,
leader?
I wouldn't pick anybody because I see there is the flavor of spirituality in everyone. When I meet people, I don't meet them as presidents or prime ministers. I meet them as human beings. That's why I say I only meet human beings.
And you think all of them are spiritually connected?
Of course.
But then why are there wars in the world?
I already mentioned about that war, no? Breakdown of trust, breakdown of communication, all that.
This century, the 21st century, is seen as being shaped by anxiety and fear.
It's not shaped by anxiety and fear. Unfortunately, fear and anxiety has come in this century as an impediment for human existence.
Okay.
So today, anxiety and stress, in spite of such big social connectivity, just shows that we need more people-to-people interaction. Gadget alone will not help. Now, gadgets need to be judiciously used. Overusing of our gadgets and burying oneself in social media is not going to help. It's not healthy. That's where, we need to understand human psyche. And understanding human psyche is spirituality.
Many international partnerships, they're based on strategy or economics, but India-Russia relationship, that also has culture and emotion, at its core. What do you think? Why is this connection different, the India-Russia connection?
See, our mind always wants something new, the latest fashion, modern things. The mind is technology. And gadget oriented. But heart is oriented with ancient things. You take pride in an old friend and a latest gadget, not the other way around. Right? So Russia has Yesterday I was in St. Petersburg, and they were so proud of their the museum, which has 3 million artifacts. I don't think anywhere else in the world you have such a huge museum. And so many museums. And so many people visiting museum itself says, or even participating in the music, in the in singing and all that, it shows that, you know, that value of heart, of emotions, is still intact in any country in the world, you know, in spite of the advancement of technology. So the combination of head and heart is the perfect balance in balanced life. So one needs both technology and music and spirituality, which would, you know, make them blossom.
Why do you think that Indian philosophy, spirituality, culture has found such a receptive audience in Russia?
Because it's more scientific in nature. You know, there are two strategies, two paradigms, the Occidental and the Oriental. The Occidental says, first you believe and then you will have an experience. This doesn't go well with science. That's why we had so many inquisitions, Spanish Inquisition and all that. The communism started because I don't want to believe unless I experience. This is the scientific temple. But the Oriental philosophy always said, first you experience, then you can form your belief system. You don't have to believe anything because someone says, including Bhagavad Gita says, after saying everything, Lord Krishna says, you know, you don't have to believe whatever I said. You think whether it is okay with you. Then you take it. So this, strategy or this criteria is the same as science. So science and Eastern spirituality never were in loggerheads any time. And so its Oriental philosophy is liked by all the scientists around the world.
Do you believe technology is evolving faster than human wisdom? And if that's true, what are the risks involved here, especially in the age of AI today?
Yeah, it challenges you to be more creative, to be more original. And we shouldn't take it as an impediment in the society. There is no going back from AI. Now you need to equip yourself, tap into your own inner resources to be more creative, to be more, intuitive.
You often speak about inner peace. But do you realistically think that inner peace is possible in a world that is driven by competition, sanctions, military alliances, economic pressures?
That is where it is more needed. Hospitals are needed when people are sick. Food is needed when someone is hungry. Similarly, when there is too many competition, too much stress, too much to do, that is when you need inner peace. And the way to get inner peace is meditation.
Critics say that spiritual leaders, they talk about peace, but they stay from the ground realities at a safe distance. How do you respond to that?
No, I don't comment on people having their opinion based on their own experience. For me, that is not my experience. I've gone to conflict zones, spoken to people, and bridged the gap in many places. In India, with many Naxalites, you speak to them, then thousands have laid down their arms. It has happened in Northeast, in Bihar, many places. And we did in Colombia the same thing. I went to the FARC and spoke to them. I think people have right to their ignorance and right to their opinions.
My final question then, if you had a few minutes with the world's most powerful leaders, and this was off cameras, behind the closed doors, what would you say to them?
You know something? I never prepare myself to talk to people what I'm going to talk to them. Okay. I'll just go show up. And whatever comes at that time, that's what I do.
All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Namaste.
Shri Shri Ravi Shankar.